time, really it's hard to even define. We know, as I say, that it exists, at least we say that it exists, and at least it exists for us. And we have tried to understand it, comprehend it, manipulate it, whatever. But it's still a concept that is very difficult, as we will see. And, pardon now? Yeah. That, what, time?
Time.
Well, it is, because time is, you really start going back and looking at some of the definitions, and it's hard for a lot of people to really pin down exactly what is time. But anyway, from very early years, we've been working with it. And of course, this all, we just got through talking about this in the previous lecture, about the time and when will it end. And people trying to rush God to judgment, so to speak. Well, let's just go way back. I don't know how far back we need to go, but way back. And at least the assumptions here by some anthropologists and others that man noticed the movement of the shadow during the day. They perceived that something was happening. Something was developing. And so probably the first real recognition of time was simply that passage of a shadow, which became more and more elaborate. The Egyptian obelisk, it was actually an elaborate sundial down to a very simple sundial. And that was the, they could see to this day. Many people in your gardens or whatever have a sundial. Works real nice on sunny days. There was a drawback. if you have a cloudy day, you were kind of left out. But it does help early man to have this sense of passage, that there's something going on. Then another early reckoning, the phases of the moon. Our term month actually comes from the word for moon. This is one of the earliest known divisions of the year. As man looked up and looked at the skies in the evening, they noticed that the moon was there. Of course, we're told God put the moon there for that reason, did he not? To help us understand this. Well, the problem, though, is that the lunar month, 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes, 2.8 seconds. Often more said 29 and a half days, or sometimes just rounded off to 29, or sometimes to 30, depending on which way you want to go. So they then would also, these early astronomers, mark time at four yearly posts. The vernal equinox, autumnal equinox, summer and winter solstices. And even those can vary. I have June the 21st, December the 21st. Sometimes it's June the earliest, June the 20th, and I think could be as late as June the 22nd. So even they can vary a little bit from year to year. Now, so, very early, it seems, very quickly, these early civilizations began to realize that a lunar year was 12 cycles of the moon, but also that it was not in sync with the sun, the solar year. So, depending on how you want to count it, either 29 or 30 days, a lunar year would be either 348 or 360 days. Most of them gave you some kind of a mixed combination, coming up around 354 days, which means you're still several days short. Now, the Babylonians, we know, were one of the first to accurately measure the lunar year. And the Jews picked up on this, since the Jews were over there, remember, in captivity. And the Jews proclaimed a new month when the first crescent was observed. There's actually quite an interesting little background on this. There in Jerusalem, the high priest was responsible for keeping the Jewish calendar of all the feasts and whatever. And so they actually had observers, official observers, all over, well, I guess at one time Israel, then of course Judea. And they would, these observers, because the possibility was that at any one place in Judea, you might have a cloudy night. And so they would have these guys posted. And when they saw the first slight hint of the crescent, they would rush as quickly as they could to the temple and announce to the high priest that they had seen the new moon, or the crescent moon. And the high priest then would proclaim the start of a new month. So, they actually had this all again, all worked out, so that they would keep track of this passage and keep the dates straight for the feast and whatever. So, now the sightings of the crescent moon then would vary somewhere between 29 and 30 days, giving a Jewish year normally about 354 days. Well, what that means then is that you end up with a year that's short compared to the solar year, which means that if you don't do something, your solar year is going to be badly off. Within a few years, you're going to be way off, are you not, as compared to the seasons. So the Jewish Sanhedrin had a council, the Council of Three, that were appointed to keep track of the calendar. And about every three years, sometimes four, they threw in a second month called Second Adar. It fell between February and March. And so they would proclaim that in that year there would be First Adar and Second Adar. And that would bring the calendar back into sync. And then they would go another 3 to 4 years, and then they'd throw in another month. Now, we do that too, but what do? We have a leap year to keep our calendar in sync. So they just waited around, and they just did it for a whole month. They just added a whole month every now and again to keep everything going. Now, the astronomers mark then 12 phases of the moon. And they mark them often by which of the constellations, as you can see here, that they were passing through. A constellation is simply a discernible pattern of stars in the heavens. And the sun, the moon, and the five visible planets will pass through this band. Called the zodiac, or the circle of the animals. So that's why that exists then. That's how they would mark the progression of the sun, the moon, and the planets as it went through the year. Now, as a result of this, we go back to the Sumerians, who had a lunar calendar. And this, we believe, is why they had a their mathematics base was 6. What is ours today? 10. We have a 10-based, you know, decimal system. Well, they had a sextesimal system. So that's why they would have 12 hours of day and 12 hours of night, which, by the way, we still have today. This is the 24-hour day. People, I teach this in my Western Civ class, about the persistence of legacies from one civilization to another. A civilization will come up with something good that works, and other civilizations pick up on it and pass it down. And this has been going on now, we believe, probably since around, 2800 B.C. And we still have a 24-hour day. Why? Let me just ask you. It worked. That's it. Yeah, it's that simple. Yeah, I'm glad you spoke. It's just this. If it works, why change it? No one else is coming up. Well, I say no one. Back in the French Revolution, they tried to come up with a. They wanted to get rid of all this old traditional stuff, so they came up with a 20-hour day and a 10-month year. They wanted to put everything on the decimal system, on the 10. So they came up. You had 10 hours of light, 10 hours of darkness, and you had a 10-month year, and it went over like a lead balloon. That was one thing that did not survive the French Revolution, among other things. But so the thing is that it's just been here. It seems to work. I don't care how you figure it. You can't really get more hours in the day, can you? So, I mean, you can do it, but I mean, it's not going to really change anything. Yeah. But and so it seems like it's worked all these centuries, these millennia. And so why not? Just keep going. 60 minutes in the hour, 60 seconds in the minute. All based on 6. Not 10, based on 6. 360 degrees circle, based on 6. 12 in a dozen. Probably, again, going back to the 12 cycles of the moon. 12 and 6 were very important numbers, we know, in the ancient world. So we still have 12 in the dozen today.
12 grades to finish high school.
12 grades to finish high school. Yeah. 12 inches and a foot. I know about you, when I was growing up and learning my math, and we would be going along, and then suddenly we'd have to shift to 12, and I thought, this is so inconvenient. Why are we still dealing with 12s? Well, that's why. We're just stuck. Now, some places in Europe, of course, have gone to a more decimal system, you know, the metric system. We have still resisted it. Okay, Austin, what's a day then? Well, the Mesopotamians counted it sunset to sunset. The Egyptians, sunrise to sunrise. The Hebrews, sunset to sunset. Oh, I've got to tell you this. I don't know if I asked you. When does the Sabbath start? Pardon? Sundown Friday night, right? Oh, yes. I have a friend I got to know down in Little Rock who's a rabbi. And I had some students, we went down there, and he asked them that. When does the Sabbath start? Oh, they all, 6 o'clock, you know, sundown, 6 o'clock on Friday night. And he said, well, yeah, yes or no. He said, before the Sabbath can start, said the, since you can't cook on Saturday, you can't clean on Saturday, you can't, said the wife has to get all the food ready, she has to get the house clean, she has to get everything ready for the Sabbath. And of course, then the mother comes out and lights the Sabbath candles, and then they have the Sabbath, you know, the Friday night. So he said, I'm the rabbi, you know, and he said, but I go home on Friday afternoon, and I go down and I get in my chair and I sit and read the paper. And I say, when does the Sabbath start? When mama says it starts. You know, he said, the Bible may say, you know, the sundown of the Sabbath, but he said, you know, God's practical. He said, you know, when the house is clean and the food's ready and mama feels like she's ready to go, then she comes out and lights the candles and then we start the Sabbath. He said, there's not a self-respecting Jewish woman that's going to start the Sabbath with a dirty house. I don't care what they say. You know, we're not going to start the Sabbath until mama says it's ready. So, you know, there's a certain practicality here with this, people. Sunset to sunset, yeah, more or less, okay? just admit 12 hours in a day, 12 hours of light. First hour was 6 a.m., our time. Midday was the sixth hour. That would be noon. And 12th hour was 6 p.m. our time. Greeks also sunset to sunset. The Umbrians in Italy, midday to midday. You'd always think about that. You wonder why more people didn't do that, midday to midday. But it was the Romans that had a big impact upon us, midnight to midnight. So that's why in the Bible sometimes you are reading along and you had to kind of stop sometimes because there are a few times when they mention the events as on Roman time, since the Romans were dominating Palestine. You know, they're talking about the midnight or the midwatch of the night or whatever. And so, you know, it must have been complicated when you had all these different peoples running around. And they all calculated times at different times. And it was, I'm sure, stringent, keeping all this straight. Now, one of the early efforts was the water clock. The clepsydra, the Greeks called it. And the idea was you would try to have a bowl there that would sink or would allow water in at a specific time, or, as you see down here, would allow water to flow out at a steady rate. But the problem is that when you put the water at the top, you have to be very careful how you graduate it, because at first the water is going to flow out very fast, is it not? And then as it gets lower and lower and lower, it's going to go slower and slower and slower. So it kind of worked, but not, it really wasn't that accurate in the long run. In the center there is one from China. And but anyway, they tried. Here's another very elaborate one on the right, a water clock, trying to use water as a standard. Now, also about history itself, time. Pagan philosophers saw, Socrates and Plato and others referred to time as a cycle, a never-ending cycle. This is also popular in Hindu theology. The great wheel, that's why they have that symbol, the great wheel. You know, it's just a constant turning of the wheel, around and around and around and around and around and around. You're born and you die and you're born and reborn and and then you go again, around and around and around. Well, that's the way the ancient Greeks also talked about it. Well, this is because also then to the pagans, history really had no purpose. No direction, no plan, no end. It was just, you're just there, you're just in this big circle. They didn't know how big the circle was. They just felt that somewhere along the way, everything would start coming back around again and everything would be repeated all over again. You'd go all the way back around. And this was just an endless cycle going around and around. Well, if you have that idea, one of the things that, interesting enough, the Greeks really didn't talk about was what we would consider the idea of progress. I mean, if you're not progressing towards anything, you're just in the circle. You're just going, everybody's just kind of frozen, say. But, and man then is trapped. We may feel that way today for other reasons, that we're on a, you know, the hamster cage type thing. But this is really the idea, you know, that man is just there, you're just kind of going through. It's all happened before. It'll all happen again. You just keep on going. Just keep right on going. Well, it would be this man we attribute it to, Augustine, that begins to write of the Christian point of view, a linear. Time is linear. Time began with God and the creation. And it was progressing, and here's the idea of progress, to an end. And that there would be an end, and there would be a judgment at that end. And so this is this breaks away from the old pagan point of view, or even the modern pagan point of view if you're a Hindu or a Buddhist or something like this. So Augustine says, look, God has his purpose. History has meaning. He has a plan. And we may not understand all about that plan, but God does. God has a plan. We just have to accept that and try to fit ourselves in with God's plan. We can't make God do our plan. We have to understand his plan or try to work with his plan. But the Greeks did give us some things. Their god of time was Kronos. And this gives us the word chronology, chronological, chronograph, things like this. And do you note something there that he's carrying that also left another indelible image for us in the future? Pardon? Yeah, the scythe, it's not a flag, that's a scythe. Many of you probably don't even, I don't know if you know what a scythe is. people don't use it as much anymore. A scythe, because again, he could cut people down to size, I guess you could say, cut people down. Time cuts everything down eventually. So Kronos eventually morphs into Father Time with still carrying the scythe. From ancient Greece. Now, a little background for us about what, again, affects us every day. This is the Julian calendar first. Julius Caesar went to Egypt, fell in love with Cleopatra, spent a year there. And before he left, he was met with by a group of astronomers led by the chief astronomer of Alexandria, a man by the name of Sosigenes. And the astronomers there at Alexandria, the best in the world at the time, had finally very, very accurately measured the lunar and solar years. Now, for the first time then, they were able to show him that a solar calendar was 365 and a quarter days, which was pretty good at reckoning for them. So what they suggested, instead of having, the Romans did essentially the same thing that the Jews did, except they had 30-day months. And so what they would do at the end of the year would just be, add, I think it's 360, so that left 5 days over. So at the end of every year, they had what they call, they just would pop in 5 days. And they were kind of like vacation days. They had a little bit of a party during those days because they weren't belonging to anybody. They were just called the intercalendar years. What they suggested to do was to scatter those days through the year, space them out, and then add one day every 4 years, which we call today a leap year. Now, I say the traditional Roman calendar had been 12 months, 360 days. Now, the Latin word calends means to announce. And that's what the high priest of the Romans, kind of like the high priest or the Jewish high priest, the Pontifex Maximus of Rome, was one of his jobs was to keep track of the calendar again. And that on the first day of the month, they would send out heralds that ran through the city of Rome, up and down the streets, yelling to everybody, this is the first day. This is the first day of Juno's month, or this is the first day of whatever month you want to talk about, Aprilis or whatever. And then they would also send them out on the 16th anyway, day of the month. Because they were 30 days. Originally, they were 30 days. So you had 15 days and then 15 days. Okay? The first 15, I don't know if I have that here or not, but the first 15 days were lucky days. The last 15 days were unlucky days. So most Roman businessmen tried to get their business taken care of in the first 15 days of the month. And so that's how they didn't have banks back then that gave out free calendars, okay? Some people would try to have calendars, but a lot of the people just didn't have calendars. They just had to wait for someone to announce the certain days. Oh, they may have it on their wall. They might have someone, you know, like we might hash mark it on the wall or something. But just to be sure, the high priest had to announce this. And we'll go on here. Now, a calendarius was a rent book. The landlord, when you heard the herald running through the street saying, in that morning, get up, whatever, this is the first day of the month of so-and-so. If you were renting, and a lot of people did, then you knew that day, sometime that day, your landlord was going to be by to get your rent. And he would be carrying a book called the calendarius, which of course gives us the word calendar. Now, here's the deal. The 30-day months then originally were divided into two halves. The 15th and the 16th, the transitional days from the first lucky 15 to the last lucky 15, that transitional 2 days were called the Ides. And that means to separate, to divide. If you separate it into two, well, pardon me, you have die. Remember, die is Latin. Die-ide. Divide. Just to put into two parts. So our word divide comes directly from that. So, the Ides. And of course, the Ides were very important. This was a transitional. The Romans were great believers, very superstitious about transitional dates. Anything that transitioned from one to another. That's why the Ides were so significant. Who should have taken the warning, remember? Yeah, Julius Caesar, beware the Ides of March. Oh, I love that, you know, when he sees the old prophet and he says, oh, the Ides have come. And he says, yes, but they have not departed. there's still time. There's always time, it seems like, for these things to happen. Okay, now, here's a question for you. See what you know about the ancient world. By looking at what you know of our calendar right now, we still use essentially the Roman calendar. What was the original first month of the Roman year? Right about this time, the Romans changed the first month to January. But that had not been their original first month. What was the original first month? Well, March. Originally, that was the first month of the Roman calendar. We'll show you why in a minute. Mars, since they were a warlike people and they worshiped Mars, Mars was their patron god, Mars was the month when armies marched. Aprilis, fertility goddess, spring, Maius, again another spring goddess, Juno, queen of the gods, July, named for Julius Caesar, since he brought the new calendar in and was given an extra day to honor him. Augustus, his great nephew, also given an extra day. And then this tells us right here, Septum, the seventh month. So if that's the seventh month, October was the eighth month, November, ninth month, December, the 10th month. January was renamed for the god of beginnings and endings. February would be the 12th month. And that would bring us back to March, the first month. So, our calendar still reflects the Roman calendar. And especially September, October, November, December. 7, 8, 9, and 10. Okay? Any questions? And by the way, they took a day away from February because no one liked February. It was called the month of fevers. Yes, sir?
It seems like by September they ran out of things to call.
Yeah. Yeah, people to announce or to honor with. Yeah, it's interesting. They just kind of finish it off by just numbering them. Good point. Well, the leap year solution was pretty good, but in actual fact, they were adding 11 minutes. Now you think, 11 minutes? You're going to get upset for 11 minutes? Well, but over 1,500 years, 11 minutes add up. But we'll come back to that in a second. The birth of Christ, by the way, probably took place between 6 and 4 B.C. This has an impact because down in this year, a man, a pope called Pope John the First, by this time the pope was put in charge of keeping the calendar straight. Since he had taken over the role of the Pontifex Maximus, the high priest, and he was advised by his head astronomer, Denis the Little, Le Petit Denis, and anyway, he was meeting with Denis the Little to discuss the Roman calendar for the next year, and they had been numbering it, well, all this time they were numbering it from the founding of Rome, which would be to us 753 B.C. So Denis the Little came to the Pope that year and he said, why are we still numbering our calendar from the founding of Rome? Why don't we number it, you know, count it from the birth of Christ? And the Pope said, well, that sounds good. Can you figure it out? And he said, I think so. Well, he missed it, as we see. It was supposed to be the Anno Domini, Anno Domini Nostri Jesu Christi, the year of our Lord Jesus Christ. Now, Anno Domini would not really catch on until it was used extensively by the Venerable Bede in his Ecclesiastical History of the English People. B.C. didn't come in even later, actually. But Denis the Little made his calculations. He went back through the records he had, counting off the consuls of Rome. It's kind of like counting off the guy that tried to count off the genealogies in the Old Testament. They didn't always list everybody. So anyway, his calculations placed the year they were in at 525. There was no year zero. And every millennium, by the way, starts with one. So our millennium started with 2001, not 2000. 2000 was the end of the previous millennium. Just like we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And that has the zero. Then the next 11. So, let me before go back to that. All that to point out is to say Christ, he counted all this up and he came up with the date that he started on. Since then, historians have looked at it more closely and they have found some things and they believe that Christ probably would have been born somewhere around 4 to 6 B.C. by a closer reckoning. Now, that's why when you get into this, like you say, when you get in on these people who are throwing a big fit over dates and times and reckoning and counting times, and people were all upset about 2000. Well, I went around and gave some lectures in this area saying, look, don't get upset about 2000. We're 4 to 6 years off. It's already happened. If you really are counting this from the birth of Christ, we now know that Christ was probably born either from 4 to 6 years earlier. So here it is, 1999, it's already gone, people. I mean, if you're really counting for the birth of Christ. I also told people that If he really wanted to count it accurately, we'd all be 4 to 6 years older. Well, not really, but people had to stop and think about that for a minute. If you move Christ back 4 years or 6 years, say. Well, I also said, you know, even though we probably know now that Christ was born 4 to 6 years earlier, we haven't changed all the textbooks and everything. It would just be too much of a mess to try to go back and renumber everything. So we'll just leave it as it is for now. But anyway, Dennis the Little did his best, okay? It's just one of these things we're trying to get over, that when you're dealing with all these dates and times and calendars, there's just been too much fiddling with all this, people, to get it all upset about it. Benedict of Nursia, Benedict who started Monte Cassino, divides the day. We can go through this canonical hours. He comes up the rule, and I want to go on through this because we're running out of time here. But he's the guy that divides the day into the canonical hours, where you work and pray, work and pray. Mainly from this, we get the noon. They called it the known hour. Originally, it was the 3 p.m. hour. But during the summertime, they ate their middle meal, the monks did, at the known hour, at 3 p.m. And so that became known as the noon hour later on. And it got pushed back to 12 as the midday. Now, the other thing about this was, how did the monks know when to do this? Well, they used water clocks, and they used candle clocks, and they used all kinds of other contraptions. And they would be announced, that the changing of the hours would be announced by the ringing of the bells. In fact, our word clock comes from the Dutch and from the Latin for a bell, ringing of the bells. Or as they used to say, you know, the bells from that movie. anyway, they had all kinds of these things. Oops, pardon me. All kinds of clocks, water clocks, candle clocks, hourglass, sand glass, whatever, trying to keep an accurate record of the hours. I love the little clock there in the bottom center. As the candle burns down, it releases the little nail, whatever, and it falls down into the little thing, goes ping. So it's an alarm clock. But none of these were really very accurate. It was then probably somewhere around as close as they can date it, about 1386, that they began to come up with a mechanical working clock. But interesting, cathedral records even mention an hour, though, a clock back in 1306. Maybe that may have been a predecessor to this, even that early. But we know that in about 1836, they did have a working clock, and it's still working. So we don't know who did it. But maybe as early as 1270, others have pointed out, they may have had a working, some kind of working mechanical clock. And the clue was called the escapement. And that's why you hear the tick-tock, tick-tock. That's what regulates the flow of time as it rocked back and forth. And these are just some of the churches that have very, very old clocks. Well, time during the Middle Ages was very static. Everything was frozen. And it was during this year then that they realized, the astronomers of Pope Gregory the 13th realized, well, most people realized that the holy calendar, the church calendar, was way out of sync, or pretty much out of sync with the seasons. And they came then and reported to him why. They had figured out that the Julian calendar was adding time every 4 years, and that this had finally added up. There were 10 days off. So the Pope then proclaimed that Thursday, October the 4th, 1582, was the last day of the Julian calendar. Everybody went to bed on Thursday, October the 4th. And when they woke up the next day, it was Friday, October the 15th. And that brought the calendar back into sync. The Pope had to also issue several important decretals saying that people could not be charged interest or be charged rent for those days. Well, to keep the calendar current, they came up with a clever formula. Every year, exactly divisible by 4 would be a leap year, except for those years divisible by 100, but the centennial years divisible by 400 are still leap years. Get that? So there'll be a test at the end of this. Can you figure this out? So in other words, the centennial year 1900 is not divisible by 400, so it was not a leap year. The year 2000 is divisible, or was divisible by 400, so it was a leap year. So by that little tweak, every 100 years, they just don't have a leap year, that puts the calendar back in sync again. And so, now how these guys, I leave it up to them. They all sit down and figured all this out, but it all seems to work, so we've been doing it ever since. Now, of course, again, the Protestant countries thought this was a papal plot, conspiracy. And so they didn't change, England and the other Protestant countries didn't change until 1752. By that time, their calendar was 12 days off, and they began to realize that what the Pope was telling them all this time was true, that the calendar was off. So they finally adopted it, and they called it the new style. That's why if you will look at the records of the birth of people like George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Franklin, whatever, they'll often say, born, you know, February, whatever, old style or so-and-so new style, because they were in the transitional period. The Russian and Greek Orthodox nations refused to change until 1970. By that time, their calendar was 13 days off the seasons. Chinese and Arab nations did not change until after World War II. But by 1950, the Gregorian calendar was generally recognized worldwide, for at least for business and official events. National cultural religious calendars are still used locally or by various groups. Then came this manipulation of time, the coming of the railroads. As they progressed across the United States, every city had its own time. Every city took a time by when the sun was directly overhead. That was noon. Well, this made train schedules an absolute impossibility. So, they then lobbied and developed the concept of standard times. And this just kind of gives you some of the background here. But we finally standardized this because of the railroads. They were powerful enough to demand that we come up with some kind of a system where we would have a standard time across the United States, and eventually this was picked up across the world, a time zone system. Daylight savings time is another issue. the idea is to give more daylight in the spring and summer, originally so that farmers could work, things like this, or people could play. And it was actually used during World War I to save energy, fuel. People could stay up and use little daylight. But then it was reestablished during World War II, and it's been with us ever since, except in places like Arizona, because people don't want people messing with God's time. And you hear that all the, well, I don't think we ought to have this. Just leave God times alone. What we're trying to get over here, people, is God could care less. You know, it's not God's time. God's not worried about time. God's timeless. Time and the measurement of time and all this I've been showing you, it's a human construct. And we have fiddled and diddled and piddled with time for centuries. And we've changed it and rearranged it and renamed it and reordered it and reconstructed it. And so, you know, daylight savings time or whatever. Just, you know, don't worry about it. Time is relative. I like that. Yes, it is. It's relative. It's pretty much what we've made it. Of course, Albert Einstein became famous, you know, for his relativity. There's a Jewish story about that I love. When Einstein came to the United States and started working at Princeton, he was a rock star. I mean, picture him in the paper and everybody talking about, you know, the relativity. And anyway, two Jewish workers were on break, and Itzhak asked Moshe, he says, Moshe, says, tell me about this time is relative from our, you know, brother Einstein. I don't really understand it. So Moshe says, well, Itzhak, you know, when you, at the end of the week and Friday comes and you go out with your girl, I mean, all during the week as you're anticipating Friday coming. You're, you know, you got a date coming, and he says, you know how time just seems to drag by. You're anxious to get there to have your date, and time just lags and drags. And then Friday comes, and you get your girlfriend, you go out, and, you know, just like that, it seems that it's over with. And so time, he says, is relative. You know, it just depends on how you're experiencing it. It changes. It's relative. You understand? And Itzhak says, yeah. And with this, he makes a living. You know, that's a good point. You know, with this, he makes a living. You know, so once it's explained, I guess anything can be made easy, can it? But, okay, well, time is relative. Now, we're so fixated on time. Here is an atomic, one of many, an atomic clock, neither gaining nor losing 1 second in 300,000 years. I don't know who's been around that long to say that it's actually working, but anyway, that's what they claim. We are all, and I mean, I wear a, you know, digital watch. We have, where do we not have a watch or a clock, something in this? I'm surprised. Huh. So many of our classrooms, I know in the history building, we have clocks in the classroom, and believe me, well, we have a few students here, I'll speak for them, but I just know that they watch it. If you get one, you know, it's like there, you get the rage. you know, we're clock watchers. And it goes back, by the way, I meant to say this, it goes back to the little old monks. And they're ringing the bells to call the monks to prayer. Well, the people in the village could hear the bells ringing too. So when the monks were called to prayer, the people would take a break, or the people would come in for lunch, or they'd go out to the fields, or they'd come back for dinner. And Europe, we became a civilization of clock watchers. We became constrained by time. We did it to ourselves, not God. You know, we did it. We're the ones who've done all this to ourselves, okay? We put all this up. And so the fact that we are such watching the clock constantly and keeping abreast of things, it's what we have constructed. We shouldn't worry about all these times. Galatians says, but now that you know God, or whether are known by God, how is it that you are turning back to those weak and miserable forces? Do you wish to be enslaved by them over again? You're observing special days and months and seasons and years. Let's not get all wrapped up in this. The days of our years are 80 years and 10, and if by reason of strength they be 80, yet is their strength and labor sorrow, for it is soon cut off and we fly away. So teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts to wisdom. Return, O Lord, how long? O satisfy us with thy mercy that we may rejoice and be glad all of our days. And let the work, Let thy work appear unto thy servants and to the glory of your their children. And let the beauty of the Lord our God be upon us. So, any questions? Yes, ma'am. Oh, that's still debatable, but there's only one clue in the scriptures that tells us anything about, pardon?
Is it the shepherds?
The shepherds, yeah. Mm-hmm. They've had to go back and they went and actually looked at the shepherd's year, and during the wintertime they take the little sheep indoors and feed them hay. And then as soon as the first spring rains come, which is at the end of February, 1st of March, thereabout, the spring rains will arrive. And then when that happens, the grass just poof, you know, we've seen it here. I don't know about where are you from?
I live here.
You live here? Okay. But you know how it was this summer here, don't you? You know, the grass turned brown. And boy, but we had a rain, and boy, being poof, turns green, just like the day. Boy, ping, you know, the grass will just pop up and turn green. Well, that's what happens in the spring. First spring rains hit, grass blossoms, and boy, they take the little sheep out, and the little sheep will eat day and night. They will literally eat 24 hours a day. And the shepherds stay in the fields with them. So when it says the shepherds are in the field with their sheep by night, that's when they would be there, usually in that time. So that's probably when Christ would have been born, would have been sometime in early spring. The possibility also exists late fall, because there's also the fall rains when that can happen. Yes?
Where is the December 25th tradition?
That originates with early Christians competing with Mithra. The Romans had a god by this time called the Invincible Sun, which was an amalgamation of all the sun gods.
I've heard that story.
Yeah. Down by the time of Constantine. It was the most popular god. They'd kind of amalgamated a lot of the various sun gods and whatever. Pardon me. We know that Constantine was a follower of the invincible sun, the Invictus Soli. And one of their major feast days was December the 25th, which is called the natal day, the birthday of the sun. They saw the sun go south, become very weak in the winter, and then as the sun began to return, gain strength, they would then have a celebration celebrating the return of the sun, the birth, the renewal, the rebirth of the sun. And that was December the 25th. It is, yeah. The S-U-N and the S-O-N, yeah, that's, it is, a, there is a certain, that's in our language. Of course, they would have called him Sol, or Sol, S-O-L, solar. But, yeah, there is a certain, to us, an irony in that. But the Christians decided to have a competing feast day. Since a lot of their people, of course, were former pagans. When that feast day came along, there was a lot of temptation to go back. And so they said, well, no, don't do that. You know, let's have our own feast day. And so they decided to celebrate the birth of the Son, Christ, on that day. And it became traditional. Okay? Any other questions? Good questions? Anything else we could might answer about time? And yes, sir? We know that around 323, Constantine decided, he was still at the time, interestingly enough, he was still a worshiper of the sun. But he had become, of course, very interested in what was going on with Christians at the time, too. And so he decided that, from what we can gather, Constantine saw Christ as just another sun god. Because, you know, he says Christ was the light. He knew enough about that way. So around 323, he proclaims the first day of the week, the day of the sun. And everybody would worship the sun god, their sun god, whoever they chose to. They could worship him on that day. And that one of the things that they believed happened there was that his mother was a Christian. Constantine's mother, Helena, was a Christian. And they believe that he went with the first day of the week because that would make the Christians happy. And so he proclaimed a kind of a empire-wide, you know, day of worship on that day. Is that what you're asking, something like that, or is there?
I just wonder how we know which Sunday is the first day.
Well, that was the, it goes for the Romans. That was just added into the week, I guess, like that. You know, just like we'd add 15 days onto the calendar. You'd add wherever that year ended. They'd just add 15 days from there. But it's interesting. The Romans had they had the 7-day week too. We have the 7-day week because of the Romans also. But of course, I say the Romans. There was a 7-day week even before that. There were several different societies that had the 7-day week, that, including the Jews and some other groups. By the way, if you want to know more about this, there's I meant to bring the book. I believe it's by Ferguson. I'm trying to get the name out for you. Yes, ma'am.
Do we know of any civilization that didn't have a 7-day week?
I'm trying to think. There may have been. But it goes pretty far back. I know I'd have to check that. But there may have been some variations on it. But 7-day week became very popular very soon, very early. I don't remember what the New World would be. There's a very good book by the guy by the name of Ferguson on, I think it's called Biblical Chronology, something like that. And he goes into it, I have to say, in excruciating detail. But he will tell you about this guy was a genius. I mean, he sat down and shows you how he coordinated the Babylonian calendars and the Egyptian calendars and the Jewish calendars and the Roman. How he does all this is just mind-boggling to me. But he also then gets into a lot of the stories in the background about how they, you know, announced the new month and how they kept track of all this stuff. It's a fascinating book. If you've got a technical mind, you really have to stick with him because he is very, very exacting in all the mathematics that he uses in keeping all that straight. Anything else? Well, we're past time, but appreciate your coming, and we wish you a good day.
Is that Ferguson?
No, it's a different Ferguson. Yeah, I want to say Ferguson. If you want to email me at phaney.harding.edu, I'll look him up. I meant to bring that book, and I just walked off and left it, because it's a great book.